Welcome to Conspiracy Beer Me. I'm Justin Scranton.
I'm Shane Smith.
And you are listening to Conspiracy Beer Me, the podcast that's making conspiracies fun again. Today, we are talking about sell the snake oil, because we're buying.
Hell yeah, I love it. It's so good. It, like, fixes everything.
Yeah, it's the discussion of the rise of the placebo effect modern culture.
I'm down.
In the human mind. It's pretty fascinating. Very excited to talk about it. If you're listening, just know that we were in Brooklyn this past weekend watching our old co-host, Sam Mazzani. What would you call it? Get married?
Yeah, get married. Yep. It was a good time. It's funny because Sam on the pod would always talk about how much he hates improv, but then he did like an improv everywhere wedding where we just hopped out of cars and got married in front of a park.
Yeah, it was a very improv wedding. Nothing was scripted.
Yeah. But it was fun. We had a good time.
I saw Bill Clinton.
You did. The best part about this, Justin's like, I'm going to go buy cigars. And then he texts me a picture of him and Bill Clinton. It was like the perfect fucking.
Yeah, it was so. It was like the universe is undefeated here, man.
Yeah. It was great. I was like, how good is that? A lot of people didn't know the whole cigar story about Bill. And then we had to tell people that.
Yeah, it's weird that younger people don't realize that that's like the cultural touch point.
Yeah.
For people our age.
Yeah, and if you don't know about it, look it up. Google it. Look up images. It's fun.
No, don't
no, don't do that.
It was interesting, man. It was a great wedding. I'm glad to be back.
Yep, I survived. I almost got...
you got assaulted.
I got assaulted in New York. I was watching the marathon, and a homeless woman spit on my neck and then tried to use a lighter to light me. And somehow,
good old progressive Brooklyn. We somehow ended up being the bad guys.
Yeah, I was yelling at her, and as a bald, very aggressive white man at the time, and she was a black lady. People thought I was the aggressor, and they're like, "She didn't do anything." And I was like, "Motherfuckers, she tried to kill me."
She walked up, and she pulled back, and then
she tried to light other people on fire. And I was like, "Yeah, I'm not."
She was just trying to light farts. That's what it looked like.
Oh, that's what it did. She was low with
low
that thing.
On the butt. Like she was like,
"Yeah."
Look, honestly, had it worked and she had lit someone's butt on fire, it would have been funny.
It would have been hilarious. It's a good
one. If they had run out on the course of the marathon.
Oh, yeah. That could have been me. The spit would have run down my neck and just put out the fire. It would have been amazing.
Honestly, I'm on her side now.
Yeah.
She didn't do anything except
Yeah, you're right. I hope you're listening, ma'am. And I just want you to know, we walked past you later that evening and you still had that lighter in your mouth, but I didn't even stop to say hi. I should have.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I should have.
Well, we're back safe. Sound.
Yeah.
It was fun. I had a good time.
Yeah.
Speaking of good times, I'm really excited to have our guest on for this episode today because it's a very interesting one. It has all sorts of twists and turns, I think.
Okay.
She will be a very funny. She's one of my favorite comedians here in North Carolina.
Mine too.
And she is the first appearance here on Conspiracy Beer Me. Please welcome Asatu Kamara.
Hi, welcome to me.
Yes.
Hello.
Hello, welcome.
That's not the appropriate response to that. Yes, indeed, welcome me.
Welcome to the studio, the unfortunate nickname of this.
This studio's lit.
Well, thanks.
We're glad to have you here.
I'm so excited to be here. I love the sound of my own voice. I love the sound of your voice. So podcasting
you. Sound great. Yeah, you sound great.
Yeah, very Terry Gross. You're listening to Fresh Air. Fresh.
Mm-hmm. I don't like the way Terry Gross says fresh as if she's trying to make it sound fresh. Like, fresh air. Fresh air. Like, just say the word.
Yeah, just fresh.
Fresh air. You don't have to fresh air. Fresh. Yeah. She's beautiful, Terry Gross, but has like...
I've always found her kind of gross.
Yeah.
I gotta look her up.
No, she has she's cancer of the...
The
throat or something. She has these treatments, but she's
heartbreaking.
She's
you would hope that like if radio is your gig, that you would have insured your voice box.
I think Terry
Gross has that. I thought it was a different person.
Diane Rehm.
That's who you're thinking of. Diane Rehm's attractive. Oh, has a voice.
Diane Rehm's
like
is the
a
one
bulldog.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Diane Rehm.
Terry Gross has a horrible ass name.
You're right. Look, all these NPR, Nina Totenbag, whatever her name
Totenbag.
Is.
Totenbag.
I feel so great that I knew Diane Rehm like that.
Yeah,
I miss her.
That's good. Yeah.
I like that she was, she did not look at all like her voice. That was what was striking.
Yes. She's, yeah.
So okay. She wasn't 85.
No. She was older, but.
She'd be called a silver fox. Didn't she have like silver hair?
She had very silver hair. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
She didn't look like a cigarette though.
No.
No, she did not. That's the thing. It sounded like
a cigarette.
Sounded like a diner with the, like, so the you best. Were in the war, and you just tell me about that.
Truly great.
Okay. Well, you have been doing comedy in the Raleigh area for 5 years now. Is that
Oh, God, I wish. Three.
Only three? Really?
In 2019, I started summer 2019. Really? And I was like, this is great. And then January 2020 happened. And I was like, oh.
Yeah.
I got to say, I hosted something for you in 2019. And I was like, man, you're really good. But what you've done in 3 years is pretty amazing. I think you're like, you've... put a lot of people to shame in the neighborhood. So good
I've
job.
Gotten better. Yeah. I appreciate you saying that. Thank you.
That's funny.
Thank you.
You have humiliated.
You have
your opponents. Mean, yes.
Yeah. Based on how many people started around the same time, fuck them. You've done a great job.
Yeah. I always tell people I kind of cheated because I was a waitress for so long and I was just talking to strangers and trying to make people laugh all day. So it's like, well, I had an unfair advantage called food service.
Yeah. At least it translated.
Yeah. Because
sometimes it does not.
Ooh, some bad servers.
No, I just think that, like, some people can be very funny in life and then not be great at stand-up.
Oh, right, indeed. Right. They're not damaged.
Right, not enough.
That's least. True. Trauma will take you there.
Yeah.
That's actually one place where I think our topic today might end up, because the more I thought about it, the more I realized that it has some relevance for what we do as comedians, although that's not the focus.
Okay.
And I will say up front that I got to this topic because I was processing yesterday's election results. Now, we're not a political podcast. We don't really get into that. But it's hard not to at least, you know, sort of know that, like, we had the first post-pandemic election. I mean, I know that, like, the 2020 election the was very much going on. And then, you know, like everything that's happened in that aftermath. I mean, like, in some sense, people said, like, truth was on the ballot. And I think, in fairness, it was kind of a mixed bag. Some people that people thought were going to win, who were real conspiracy theorist driven, didn't.
Yeah.
And then some people did. I think it's a real mixed bag.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know why would certain people won certain things, but I'm like, Marjorie Taylor Greene, come on.
We're gonna start making fun of
Georgia now. South Carolina's good in my book now. Fucking
yeah, it's weird. Like,
yeah,
it's weird how dominating Marjorie Taylor Greene's win was, but then, like, Lauren Boebert, who's just the Colorado version, like, she is. I don't think they've even called the race yet. You know, so
yeah,
it's like, I mean, I get it. Like, we're a very divided country, and that just got me interested in like, how is this possible?
Yeah,
and that led me to the placebo effect and how medicine deals with it versus how psychologists are starting to look at it. And they have a crazy theory that I want to talk about right now. Both of you, I'm sure, familiar with the placebo effect, right? Which is...
I mean, I swear to God, you were in the very beginning, I thought you were going to say placenta.
Yeah, the
but
placenta.
I know it's
the
different.
The placenta effect.
Well,
I have a placenta in my fridge, freezer.
No,
have,
well, people eat that too, so it could be part placebo.
Justin did.
Yes, we did. Yeah, we made.
You're
a
not. You did not.
He did.
You did not.
Yeah, we ate the first. We ate the second kid's.
The first kid wasn't good enough.
You're well, like, he was born in a hospital,
oh,
so they wouldn't give it to us. But the second two kids were born at home. So, and then we had the third kid's placenta made into vitamins, like these.
I think that's the best way.
So they were definitely placenta placebo pill.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's a little cannibalistic, but it's
cannibalistic,
right? It's people. We're eating
Yeah, but you know what? My wife.
Soylent Green is
when
placenta.
When you got a pregnant wife, you just sort of, whatever she's like, I think I want to eat this kid's. Like
home.
Lining,
his
yeah,
home. Yes, temporary house.
Yeah, she. Okay,
all right. Placebo, not placenta. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which, of course, is when you do a drug test. I think it was first identified in 1955 by a Harvard scientist doctor, and essentially since then, it has become the sort of standard for testing pharmaceutical drugs. Is that we give people the drug and we give people the placebo, and it's a double blinded, so neither the patient nor the doctor know which one's getting which, and the drug has to show statistical significance compared to the placebo. And the problem is that that's getting harder and harder to do.
Really?
Because placebos are getting better and better.
They're putting less and less stuff in there, and
the
it's working better.
Sugar in those pills.
It's no, it's great.
Sugar
it's,
in the raw.
And the progress of placebos has tracked the progress of drugs. So as drugs that's get
crazy.
Better, placebos get better.
Wow.
And so it like I read an article of like a somebody that came up with something to treat sleep disorders. And then they got done, and like literally the CEO was crying because the results were like, yeah, sugar pill does just about as good as this. Like all people need is to think they're taking something, and they actually get the sleep they need.
Statistically significant.
That's just the universe trying to save us some money.
Well, I mean, yeah, unless you were invested in that company.
Well, what's money? Fuck those people.
I'm still trying to wrap my brain around that concept, the placebo getting better. Is it, do you think that in the research that they're describing the fake? I don't know. They're not describing it as fake. Man, I've been mind blown.
Yeah. Well, hold on, because it gets even more crazy. Is that they have been trying to figure out this placebo effect, and it turns out that it's incredibly complicated. So they were like, let's see like if certain placebos work better. Here's what they found. Size of the placebo pill matters.
Shape.
Always.
Shape and size. Like they're
coding.
What's that?
Coding?
Color.
Oh, color.
Yeah, the color. That's like a red pill apparently is like the most effective placebo. People are like, this has got to work.
We've all seen The Matrix.
Yeah.
It's red, right.
Yeah.
It's red.
Wait, is the red the one that takes you to The Matrix?
Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
I'll take a red
pill. See the real world.
Yeah.
So the color of the pill matters. Injections work even better than pills.
Oh, my God.
If you get injected with sugar water, like...
Can that... Not kill you?
I don't know, right?
I don't know. If lick a stick didn't kill us, I don't think that sugar water can.
Yeah, maybe not.
Still the best candy ever made. And I know that people, I don't even know if you know what I'm talking about.
I don't.
It was a 3-panel pouch of just straight sugar.
Lick-A-Maid?
Are you talking about the dippers?
Yeah. Dippin'.
Fun dip. It's called Fun Dip. And the stick was delicious.
The stick was delicious. So it was just cocaine. It was just cocaine for kids, different color.
I throw the dust out, and then I just snort the stick.
The stick is so good. It's like what you want chalk to taste like.
Yeah, it's vanilla flavored. It's just vanilla sugar.
That shit was incredible that they sold that to children.
Oh, do you remember baby bottle pops?
Oh, yeah.
It was the same, like just sugar, and then it was candy that was hard shaped like the nipple of a baby bottle. Mm-hmm. And you would just stick it in the sugar and suck on the baby bottle nipple. Baby bottle pop.
What is the drug that makes you want to suck on a like a pacifier that like all the rave kids were doing?
Oh, MDMA or ecstasy?
Oh, ecstasy. Yeah, makes you
pacifiers.
Really...
Yeah.
They were like, you ever been to a rave and you're like, what is wrong with you infantiles?
Yeah, I just sucked my thumb. I was like, I can't afford one of these because I spent all my money on this drug.
Have you really been to a rave where people were?
Oh, yeah. I'm very old. Cool I'm very fun. Old.
No.
You've never been to a rave?
I've never been to a rave.
Really?
What?
I'm not very cool.
Oh,
I didn't like leave my home till I was 25.
I think raves were really, really popular at like late 90s and the early 2000s.
And that's right when I got to college. There was a lot of raves.
There was a lot of raves back in
the day. Oh, man. That sounds so fun.
Yeah. It was a good time. I like it. All my friends were DJs. It was great.
Gosh, damn it.
Yeah.
Woodstock 99.
That's right. Yeah.
You were there.
So, I was.
So here's I told you pill size, pill color, the injections work better. The amount the doctor believes in the placebo, the salesmanship is what fools people.
Wow.
So much so that this is like crazy. A doctor was like, I don't think this common knee surgery to relieve knee pain does anything. So what he did was he just cut people's knee open, did nothing to their knee, sewed it back, and people experienced the same level of...
They were walking again.
They were walking.
He got sued, I bet.
No. He wrote a paper for the Baylor College of Medicine, and now they're like, see, it's all placebo. Like they're
That's beautiful.
I don't think they're doing anything to their knees. I think it's just the fact that I got my knee done. It feels better. It's just, it's all in the head.
That's
what we believe.
Yeah. What's interesting is every time I have an issue and I go to the doctor, the minute I go to the doctor, it's gone. Whether they give me anything or not.
Right. Your hair looks good when you're getting a haircut today.
Exactly. Day. Yeah, yeah. Not me specifically, but that's just a generalization.
Yeah. Not yeah. No, your hair looks great all the time.
Yeah, I'm sure. At least in the back of my neck.
Yeah. This is all part of a bigger problem that social scientists, psychologists, and others have started to sort of delve into because the placebo effect is becoming so prominent. And that's where I want to pick this up, because they have proposed a new theory, which I find fascinating, especially in light of like the recent election and conspiracy theories and their proliferation. And essentially it points to a major paradox in the human psyche, which is that human beings lie all the time.
So much lying.
Oh, yeah.
Like, and we lie, like lying is actually relatively common in the animal kingdom, but it's lying for like self-preservation.
Hold on.
Hunting, what?
Animals lie?
Well, they don't lie.
Those bastards.
You're talking about cats don't lie to me?
Birds lie a lot. They fake calls. They deceive. Yeah. Like if you think deception as a lie.
Mm. Okay, sure.
Like playing dead is a form of lying.
That truly is dishonest.
But we do it for all sorts of reasons.
Yeah.
And people lie to get a job. They lie to get fired from a job. Like we lie to make friends. We lie to be accepted. Mm. Like lying is crucial. And here's the crazy part. We all know it. Right? We all know that humans lie all the time.
But not all of us.
No, and you especially not at the top of a podcast where we're introducing a guest.
I'm just saying.
You don't lie.
I used to lie a lot in middle school. And then I remember when I was 14, I made a conscious decision. I was like, I need to stop lying so much. Because I can't remember some of my lies.
Yeah, I'll get you. Yeah.
So the last time I lied, I remember like it was a date and I told this guy three lies. And I was like, if we have another date, I have to remember the three lies. So like.
So no second
so
date.
So I counted them. Well, that does sound sad.
Are they white lies or are they like, oh, I own a second home in the.
No.
Poconos.
Is this a PG-13 or
no? This is X.
This is X.
Yeah, say underrated. Whatever you need. Yeah.
Well, one of the lies was that I was like, oh, I've never seen a uncircumcised penis before.
This was at dinner.
This was at the date.
Oh wow, and that was a lie.
That was a lie, but okay. I wanted him to feel good.
Okay,
and then sure. I lied about two other things. So I had to remember them.
But why would Why would that make him feel good that you never, like, were you feigning curiosity?
Yeah, I was feigning excitement because he was Scottish, I think. He was not from America. And he was like, I bet you never seen this. And I was like, I sure haven't.
So this wasn't at dinner. This was at the moment.
Yeah. The date.
Aye.
Yeah. Oh, the only way it was at dinner, he was wearing a kilt. And you're like looking up the. Yeah. He bent over to pick up a fork and you're like, oh, I haven't seen one of those before.
The purpose of that is that I lie so rarely that I make it a note to remember when I do lie.
Sure.
I try not to lie regularly. Yeah. So I remember the last time I lied.
But listen, I think that you're thinking of lies in a way that they're inherently nefarious and dangerous, which we lie.
Ten Commandment. Mm. It's one of
But there's lots of reasons. There's lots of reasons why it's good to lie, because it can protect somebody.
It does. No, it's true, for especially feelings. I'm like, like back to the dating thing. I ghost before I tell someone because I don't want to hurt them, which I think is hurtful too. Mm. But instead of lying, I'd rather just ghost because I don't want to lie.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is, because there are so many contexts where we can lie. And because our language is so complex that it's able to lie. Although I've been also in the same articles I was reading, the guy was saying that like, if you were to like just record yourself and then listen to it like you listen to an animal, like most of our language would sound, it's just the same word phrases over and over again that have no meaning. And it's just like a...
Weird.
Because like animals do that. They're like... But then they'll make a noise that's actually conveying information.
Oh.
And that's what a lot of what our language is.
So our podcast.
Most of it is not conveying information.
No, most of it's
chirping.
Just
little squirrels.
Yeah, we're just, it's just chirping.
Yeah. I believe that.
But we have the capacity to lie. Now, here's where a social scientist, psychologist say things get weird, the paradox. Hmm. We know we lie. We lie all the time. Yet, human beings are incredibly gullible.
Yeah.
We believe so much stuff. Yeah. We believe so much stuff without looking into it, knowing that it's a lie. Like, I think about it like advertising. Like, I will catch myself being drawn in by an advertisement where I'm like, I really like the look of that shirt or those pants. Then I realize, I'm like, wait a second. That's a model specifically chosen.
Yes.
To look phenomenal in that. Mm-hmm. And every part of it, from the cuff to the, everything, is staged by professional photographers to appeal to me.
Yeah. That's why I think marketers are Satan. And I work in the industry. And I think that's why I haven't been able to get jobs, because they listen to this
dishonest.
Podcast.
It is.
We know the lie, but yet we're still drawn and taken in by the lie. We're extremely gullible in some sense.
That's so interesting that we lie, yet we are very believing. So do you think that means the heart of man is good? The fact that we are willing to believe in truth?
No, I think that's... See, that's lie. Yeah. No, I think it's terrible that we do that. I mean, I don't think it's terrible. I think... As I'm going to explain to you, the theory, there's an evolutionary reason for this. And the paradox that is, like, one, we lie all the time.
Truly.
Two, we believe a lot of stuff. And there's a lot of reasons why we believe it. Like, one reason why we believe it is because, like, one person said, the cost of researching everything is too high. Mm. So we just believe stuff where we think the risk is low. And the cost of figuring out whether it's true is high.
It's like headline readers, like, which I think we're all guilty of. We just read a headline. We're like, well, that's probably true.
That's
true.
Right. I don't want to go into this, you know, either because it doesn't affect my life greatly or because I don't have the time to invest in, like, figuring out whether it's true. So I'll just believe it.
Sure.
We just blindly believe a lot of stuff.
That's where stereotypes come from and where it gets dangerous.
Yeah, for sure.
Because you don't want to research, you know, whether or not most Black folk are gangsters. So you just believe the lie. I'm Black, if you're not listening. Yeah, I'm allowed to say these things.
This is a video. This is radio. Please tell people.
Yes, just so you know, despite the Terry Gross, who is actually not white.
But, yeah, which is crazy.
She's not white?
No.
Neither is Diane Rehm, despite that voice.
Where's my phone? Terry Gross is not white. Look Terry Gross
up. What is Terry Gross?
No, she's white.
She's not white.
She's white.
She's a person of color.
She's
I mean, she might be... She's probably
she's
Jewish.
Light skinned.
Not only,
if
she's white, she's real white.
She's just light skinned.
Yes.
She's like women's studies white.
Yeah.
She's definitely a feminist. That's funny. She does look like women in gender studies.
Yeah, like that's
professor.
She invented it.
Terry Gross.
Yeah. Well, what social scientists call this paradox is the paradox of self-deception.
Mm-hmm.
Because humans are one of the only species that they're able to say, like, we will engage in self-deception.
Mm.
And they have a theory is that it's an evolutionary mechanism.
Okay.
Now, in some sense, that's not groundbreaking, because it's like, if humans are going to deceive themselves, there has to be a reason.
Right. Of course, we got there through evolution.
Like, yeah, right. There has to be some reason why, like, deceiving yourself has an evolutionary benefit to it.
Sure.
Right.
So I just give up hope. I tell people all the time, like with stand up, like I was so delusional the first few months that I did it that like if you don't have that level of self-deception, delusion that you're so good and you're so great, you're not going to be able to keep doing it after you're gone. Right.
Yeah. And that's really when I said there's a little bit of a tie to comedy.
Yeah.
Like I think there is a level of like stark naked reality of like that was not like I am not good enough to do that or this versus this self-deception where you almost think like I can handle this, I can do it right.
People have often said to me, they're like, man, even when it was bad you just kept going, and I was like, it was bad?
I was gonna say that that's the best response. Like, what do you mean bad?
What do you mean bad?
Right.
Up there killing.
I got blinders on. That's the only way I can make it through it.
But there's a balance, because you can tell the people who you say who maybe haven't been advancing is because they're stuck in the delusion and they don't get to the other side where they're like self-critical. You have to start off delusional and then develop the criticism or else you don't get better.
And here's a study that these guys who put forward this, they wrote a book that's called Denial, Self-Deception, False Beliefs, and the Origins of the Human Mind.
Okay.
Varkey and Brower. So here's the. I love these tests. Like, I think psychology tests are the best test ever, because you're just like, I'm gonna take a bunch of college freshmen and just just fuck around with them and make them
And they're like, you get a gift card to Chili's. They're like, I'll do anything.
Is this ethical? No, it's fine.
Chili's is not ethical, but you're getting a gift card.
Yeah. So here's what they do. They take two groups, control group, test group. Tell each group you're gonna take an IQ test twice.
Okay.
All right. Now, with the test group, what they say is, for the first test, if you want, we'll give you like an answer key to see like what the answer is, how to solve it and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And they're like, they could choose to use it or not. All of them chose to use it.
Damn.
And then the other group, the control group, doesn't get that test.
Okay.
Doesn't get that option. Then there's stage two, and they're like, okay, we're going to test you again. Similar test, not the same test, but similar test. How do you think you're going to do?
You're going to do worse if you had the
notes. They ask people to predict how they're going to do. The people who got the answer key, they outrageously over-predicted how well they were going to do.
Oh.
They're like, I'm going to crush this test, right? And then they took the test. Both groups took the test. The other group was like, yeah, I'll do okay. There's a lot I didn't understand. They took the second test. Both groups did almost identical. Like, there's no statistical difference between either groups. But the test subjects were like, yeah, I crushed that test. Mm. Like, there was a level of self-deception where they thought they were going to do well. They took the test. They didn't do well, but they still thought that they did well.
Hubris.
This is the second test. So they've taken the first test.
They've taken the first test with the answer key, with help. And then they think, dude, I know how to do all this.
I don't think they realize how IQ tests work, where the questions are different each time.
Right, yeah.
Maybe.
No, yeah, that might be it. But do you think there's some analogy to, like, your first couple months of stand-up? Or, like, I almost have the opposite effect. But I know sometimes when you walk, I know I've walked up on stage and I'm like, I'm going to have a great set tonight. Mm-hmm. And then nice. I do have a great set tonight.
Self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah.
Right, like this idea of, like, but doesn't that start to sound a lot like
yeah,
the placebo effect?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the placebo is totally psychological.
It's a totally psychological phenomena.
Yeah.
Go
ahead.
Sorry. No, that's it. Go.
Yeah. Oh, I was just going to say, especially in comedy. So there's a show I remember very vividly at Good Nights. And I was like nervous about something. And there's a comic that was always confident, always crushed. And he's like, just have confidence. And I'm like, that's just not how that works. You don't just have confidence.
right,
but he
right.
crushed every time because he just was like, I'm going to crush.
Yeah.
Did you do it? Did you just have confidence?
No, I had a horrible set. Because I was like, don't tell me what to do, asshole. I was like, what fucking?
Yeah.
I was like, that's not how I'm wired. I don't just think I'm not that guy. So it's like.
I think I'm I went down to Wilmington with our Bop and Flop cohorts, Jordan. Excuse me. And right before my set, I'm walking on stage and Jordan's like, don't bomb.
Oh, that's a fucked up move.
And I was like, why would you say that?
Yeah.
And he was like laughing like it was funny. And I looked back to him and I was like, I'm going to bury you.
Yeah.
And I think I'm driven more by like this anger.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I'm driven by feelings of self-loathing and worthlessness.
Which will make you do better.
Which makes me. Even when I do well, it's not enough, and I have to keep chasing the dragon's tail.
Yeah.
But I do get that it's really just the other side of the same coin, where people are just like, if you think something's going to work, like, maybe it does work, even if it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Right? Like, at least in the mentality of how it approaches it.
Yeah.
But there's the objective, it didn't work. Like, there are some people who are so confident and get on and still don't kill. So you do have to have the skills to back it up. Your delusion can only go so far. Mm-hmm. Placebos are different. Like, eventually your knee is going to shut down despite the fact that you believe it was better, right, if the surgeon did it.
Well, okay, there might be some truth to that. I'll just say there is some truth to what you're saying, but let's step back and then and reattach to the beginning of this is what the social scientists think is that this is all rooted in the problem of human anxiety. That we are such a tremendously anxious species, and it's driven by, and this is what blew my mind, is like, it's driven by the idea that we are the only species we know of that carries with it the knowledge of our own death.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Oh, yeah.
Like, we have, our language has become so advanced that all of us inherently know that we're going to die.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so if you think about, like, the day that you're going to die.
You know, I don't know the day. Do you
well,
know
no, but if you knew, like, if somehow you knew, if you knew that you were going to die that day, the anxiety you would have with everything, you would be, like, making breakfast.
We would all be speeding. We would all be killing each other. We're like, I'm not going to die.
So here's what I had a thought probably a month ago, 2 months ago, that I was going to die before my 46th birthday, which was last week.
Yeah.
And I didn't. So think of that month just being riddled with anxiety. And I wasn't anxious. I was just like, I'm accepting the fact that I'm going to die before my 46th birthday. I told my wife, I was like, hey, I didn't tell anyone because I just didn't want people to know that this is what I was thinking about. But I didn't die. And my wife said, well, what time were you born? There's still time. And I was like, you are the best.
Marry me again?
Yeah. But I was like, we say we would be filled with anxiety. That's a great joke. She's great. Filled with anxiety, but I wasn't because I was like, well, I can't do anything about it. But I think on some level you're right. But I think once you're I don't have a, terminal illness and things like that. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think that what the authors of that book I cited call the death wisdom, that like a little bit of that existential dread is sort of lingers within
it
us.
It just hangs there. Yeah.
That creates a level of anxiety in humans that we have evolved to deal with through what they call the capacity of self-denial.
Mm.
Like, to some degree, capacity for denial.
Sure.
Yeah.
Through self-deception.
There
because
we go.
Okay, yeah.
We have to come up with what they call noping strategies, which are think like confirmation bias.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like if you want to find evidence of what you want to believe, then you will go and you will find it.
Just the way you ask the question will be different.
It's the way you will always ask the question in a way to get the answer that you hope to elicit.
Mm-hmm. Even if you're unaware.
Right. You will seek the sources that are most likely to give you that, and you will ignore sources contrary to what you want to happen. And that's all part of the self-deception that we need to feel safe enough. Because if you really thought about life, you would just do nothing.
Yeah.
You'd be immobilized.
Literally be immobilized with anxiety because of how.
So we need the self-deception, otherwise known as hope.
Yeah, right. What is that about?
And that's where they say we need to broaden our idea of placebos, not just to sugar pills and medicine, but they're a much broader social phenomena. That the way that we sort of deal with the existential dread is things like political parties or religion, which are just mass placebo pills.
Ooh.
That whether they work or not is irrelevant. The question is, it's just, do I believe this? Like, do I believe this enough that it provides me with some sort of,
power
or escapism, peace, or sort of, a pain medication, that this allows me to move forward in a world where anxiety and anxiousness and dread are just impending everywhere.
Well, it gives you a quote unquote reason to live. It feels like you're part of a fight. If you're like using that as a placebo, it's like,
correct.
Oh, I'm a partner with this thing and we're going to get to the end together.
Right. So if you look at it from a perspective of, let's say you're terminally ill and you go in for a new drug study and I'm either getting the drug or I'm getting the placebo. In your head, you're like, I'm just going to pretend I'm getting the drug.
The drug, yeah.
Because the alternative is,
yeah,
I know I'm getting the fucking placebo. I know the shit.
But how many people
work.
Would choose to think the placebo part? Because humans.
Comics
would, yeah.
That's absolutely. The art. In some ways, I think that this is the inherent like nature of comedians, where we're just like, we think we're always kind of fucked.
Yeah.
Or is the placebo effect the fact that you're always assuming that it's not a placebo, and that's obviously what the effect is? So you can't just grasp onto like the hope of nothing. You're grasping onto the hope of something, even though it may or may not be real. You probably already grasp this concept, and I'm just grasping it.
No. I haven't grasped anything.
I'm coming in late with the, no. Oh, my God.
No, I'm an idiot.
So, you just got to... So, let's call the medicine Lunesta. I just made that up. It's for sleep.
Wait, that is a real drug.
I know. Is it? But it's a pretty name. I feel like the pharmaceutical companies took all the good baby names.
Oh, yeah. That's a good...
This is the blackest sound.
This is a bit.
It's never been done, but I think it's funny.
It's great.
Thank you. Yeah, Levanta.
No, that was a placebo compliment.
Yeah.
No, I'm joking. I think that's good. No, I do love
it. No, it's
that.
Funny.
It is. She got me back. She gave me a placebo back.
Placenta.
That's not a bad name, placenta.
There's a lot of names that name. Sound good and they mean something, though.
Oh, yeah, they do. Yeah. You're right about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like dick.
I mean, in another language, though, it probably means moonflower.
Oh, yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I was thinking about this the other day. This is way off the subject. But do you know the old term for Black Americans?
That, oh boy!
Not the not the hard R version, but like
there was the a color in Spanish.
Yes, like the color in Spanish. No, but I was like I realized I'm like literally when you called someone that word, you were just calling it like I call people Black all the time. Like
that's okay.
But can you just translate your way out of a slur? I mean, like, right?
Well, I don't think I understand.
Because the word black,
yeah,
in Spanish is the word negro.
Or is it negro?
Negro.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
We're all fluent.
But I think in French, when you call someone a black, like, oh, they're black, you would say it as...
I don't think the A is... I think the A makes it bad. A black. No, you just call them black.
The black.
Yeah.
You know, it's any blacks. Article, definite or indefinite, yeah, exactly. In front of black makes it bad.
I just don't know. I was just like, I don't know if you could just get out of a racial slur through translation. It seems like if it's a slur, black should be a slur, but it's not. But I mean, in some sense, it's what the community is comfortable with. They get to determine.
Yeah. I don't know.
Well, any word with malice becomes a slur. So sure. If they even took an innocent term like kitten and there was enough hate behind it,
you could turn any word
we'll
into
turn it into something bad, and then we can reclaim it again, you know, like that's all right. My bitches, those are my bitches, those are my girls. Uh-huh. I love them, they're not a bitch.
Yeah, that's
they're
that's,
my bitches.
That's
same
true.
With the n-word.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
the
true.
F-word is coming back by, you know, people who are allowed
is
to
is it really
it. Oh yeah.
Oof.
Yeah, the three letter out. F-word
or
it
six
has more letters sometimes.
Or six. Yeah.
Oh, it could be six too, you're right.
Yeah.
Right. Or seven if it's a bunch of them.
Mm, a bundle of several sticks.
Yes.
We all know the loophole.
Yeah.
I was talking about sticks, bro.
Yeah, bro.
Yeah, right.
Or cigarettes.
Well, sorry to derail on that. I was thinking about that, and your comment made me think of it in terms of like when we talk about placebos in this country, it helped me understand like how someone like Marjorie Taylor Greene, mm-hmm. who we've consistently made fun of on this podcast.
Yeah.
Like how she could be reelected. Because if you've been taking that placebo, mm-hmm. and you feel like this is making my life better, my anxiety's down, sure. the world mm-hmm. makes more sense mm-hmm. to me, as long as I think that this person and these ideas are what's going on, it's really fucking hard to stop taking that medicine. It's people's ability for self-deception. This is all built around self-deception.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
And when people are deceived, think about the people in that experiment. Like, they didn't do well on that test, objectively. Mm-hmm. They did no better than the other group. But they swore up and down that they crushed it. They thought they were going to crush it. They didn't. They thought they crushed it.
But objectively, they sure did it. They right. sure did it.
So the objectiveness of truth and reality is probably out the window. Mm-hmm. Like, I think what we see now is we see a culture that is almost irreparably divided because people are just like, I need that drug to make life make sense.
Right.
I need that placebo. And that's what these guys' theory is that this is an evolutionary mechanism to combat the increasing amount of anxiety in our society.
Huh. Man.
Sorry to bring it down here in this comedy podcast about conspiracy.
No, it's really interesting because what I think it was around the time I started doing comedy, I was going through a quarter life crisis, and I tried skateboarding and I about died.
What is that, 25?
30. 30. I expect
Saturn Return.
Yeah.
He'll be 120 before he dies.
I'll be 120, yeah.
Sorry.
But I bought a book called The Denial of Death, which is about this very thing, how, like, as a people, we somehow have had the ability to deny that we're going to die and how that helps us move forward as a society. I did not read the book because I started comedy.
Hey.
But it's good. It's good.
So your description of the book is based on the jacket cover that you read?
Yeah, yeah. This is what I've read of the book. The Denial of Death is Ernst Becker's brilliant, impassioned answer to the why of human existence. And I was like, well, he solved it. I don't got to read it.
That's fair.
It was a 1973 book, and if we're still struggling with it, clearly it wasn't a...
I don't know. I feel like that's so interesting. I've never been afraid of death. Well, maybe before I was like 8 and became mm-hmm. self-aware, because I'm like a depressive more mm-hmm. than a manic.
Okay.
So like when you're sad and you want to die all the time,
sure, sure.
Even when you don't want to die, you're like, oh, don't worry, I'll want to do that again. It'll be fine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't. My mortality doesn't affect me because of my brain chemistry being off.
Oh, interesting.
But do you have but interestingly enough, placebos are most effective with mental disorders like sleep, depression, all that stuff. But do you not think that my depression bleeds into my anxiety like wholeheartedly?
I think it's just different types of like people call it bipolar now, which I hate that. I think manic depression is a more like it tells you what it is. Sometimes you're manic and you love life and you can fly and you're an angel. Right. Literally, I thought I was an angel for several months when I was 20.
Oh wow.
I know.
You literally thought you were an angel?
Oh, yeah.
I thought you were an angel since I met you.
There's this movie called The OA or a show.
Yeah, we watched it. It's a great show.
I 100% that's what was in my delusional brain. But I was
You were
young.
Doing drugs or no? Just like
No. It's called psychosis. It happens without any medication or drugs.
That
was
awesome.
If you're bipolar, it'll happen. So that was crazy. But usually I'm just a depressive. I haven't had that lovely psychosis in 10 years.
Oh, wow.
And the depression like is very pure in a sense where there is an anxiety with it. It's just a months of nothing and death and nothing and the sweet release of death feeling nothing, and then it ends and then you feel great, you know. Not always an angel, but but it's great because even stable, I've been stable for several years now. I don't feel like a sense of mortality because I'm like death is something you've always wanted.
Oh, interesting.
Like, why are you afraid of something that was comforting for so long?
Right. But doesn't your logical side say, well, the reason why I thought that was because of a chemical equation in my
imbalance,
head.
Yeah, an imbalance. But I'm never going to have lived without that experience. So, like, I'm just forever changed to be okay with the concept of death.
Yeah.
You know, or it's just like, oh, I'm not afraid of that anymore. That used to be my buddy.
Yeah, I've been depressed a lot of my life, and I think that those manic or those like higher points are probably when I was more afraid of death, because when you like have
something to lose,
right? So, and that may have been around the same time when I was reading that book, because my wife and I had been married shortly after or before that, and I actually had a pretty comfortable life. I had cats and a great house, and everything was pretty good. So I was like, oh, I don't want to lose this.
Yeah.
And then you go through times where you're like, oh, this becomes steady and it becomes the same all the time, and then it becomes depressive again. And then you get to another point where you're like, oh, I've been a new experience in my life where it's more that I don't want to lose. Like, this is ridiculous, but I had the thought when the new Star Wars came out after the, you know, not the three shitty ones, but the one after that, I was like, please let me just live long enough for this. Because that, and like, that's sad that that's what
that
I just.
That made you want to live?
The new Star is like, please
what
give me.
What a letdown.
I know.
What
I was like, no, no, the new one was better. Not the three, not the sixth
seven,
one.
Eight,
but
nine.
The 7, 8. Like, I just wanted to, like, the hype around it, right? And I was like, oh, please, I don't want
to
die
but that
for
was
this.
A shitty way to.
Yeah, but it was.
Shitty
it
reason
was,
to stay
it was
alive.
It was a new hope for me, guys. Let me give that a rim shot.
There it is. That's beautiful.
No, I would feel really let down if I was like...
Oh, I was let down, then I went back to my depressive state.
Yeah.
Thanks,
but it kept
thanks,
you going those couple
Steven
of years.
Yeah, oh, wait, he
kept
didn't do
you
that.
Going. What's,
thanks, George Lucas.
Lucasfilm.
Yeah.
But
well, what do you guys think about this notion that these guys put forward, this theory that what we see in society right now is people finding a placebo, and again, that broad sense of the word,
yeah,
like this is the thing that like just sort of. And I think that the reason I like this idea, and this is kind of my final thought, okay, but is that I often find myself like arguing with people, and I get pulled into arguments, and I'm like, that's just wrong. Mm-hmm. It's like that's not true. That's not correct. Mm-hmm. You're wrong. And I spend a lot of effort trying to like, and I have shifted to where I feel like I'm more. I don't attack or blame. I'm just like, let's talk through this. Sure. Like, let me see if I can get you to this truth. But now when I read this, I'm realizing like, no. Like, if you were to show somebody that the placebo they were taking was sugar, the alternative for them is like, are you telling me that like I haven't done anything to treat my cancer for decades?
You're just ripping away everything.
Yeah, you're just pulling out the floor from underneath them and they're in a free fall. So there is so much invested in them saying, well, yeah, but, well, I don't, mm-hmm, you need. Mm-hmm. And that makes it all seem like less volatile to me. And I'm not saying, and like, I'm a cisgendered, straight, white male.
Still have valid opinions and thoughts and feelings.
Yes, I
for
do.
For now.
Not according to my daughter. I'm not someone whose existence and identity is at risk in all of this, is what I'm saying.
Right.
So I do get where other people are like, that's easy for you to say.
Show them the sugar pill for the better of everyone else.
Yeah, where people are like, I don't fucking care if
it's helping you.
It's fucking hurting. It, like, your sugar pill is threatening my very existence and identity, so fuck off. Get that.
Yeah.
My point is like, but it does seem like I don't know. I mean, I just think of people now. When I think of QAnon people, I was like, oh, they're just fucking. That's just a sugar pill. That's just a fucking placebo effect they need to make sense of a world that doesn't make sense to people anymore.
Well, I think the sad thing is, if we're looking back at the medical analogy, or at least the like clinical research side, so we're looking for a new medicine or a new cure, and we're studying a placebo, a control, and we're studying the regular thing. There also is like maybe something that already works, a medication that already works.
Right.
So in the same way where you have like QAnon like helping these people, it's not like that's the only option they have. It's like, hey, guess what? We actually already do have Lunesta right now.
Yeah, we have socialism.
We're just looking for an... Yes, thank you. No, that's the whole thing. Like, you can pull that sugar pill away from them. They'll be in free fall for a little while, and then they'll realize, there is another actual medication that's been, like, statistically proven, and it's not a placebo. Like, there is hope.
Right. There is...
That's interesting, yeah.
There are drugs. Like, look, we all need drugs.
Yeah.
Take the right drugs.
And we're not in the research stage in some of these. Some of these, they beat the placebo. Socialism. And I love that you said that. I'm a democratic socialist for sure. But
It's interesting. I think that.
I need another beer. I need real drugs.
Right now. Just we should have non-alcoholic beers. Maybe
we should
placebo.
Have rave drugs.
Yes.
I would love to try Madumna.
Yeah, it's
what,
fun.
What is
MDMA? My?
Oh, what does that do?
It makes you just want to hug you.
Is that Molly?
Yeah.
Oh, I've done Molly.
Is it fun?
It's Madonna? A good time.
That's a no.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I guess it depends on what you get. When I was taking ecstasy in college at raves,
ecstasy and Molly, same thing?
Well, no. So I think ecstasy back in the day could be a combination of many drugs. It often sometimes had heroin in it, sometimes had. Special K in it, but you would never know, so you'd have to send it. There's a whole website that you could send your pills off and they'd test it.
No. And they'll send them back to you?
No. Okay. You just have to lose a pill. Unfortunately, it's not a no return policy. But yeah, they're different drugs.
They didn't test shit. They're like, hey guys, we'll test drugs. Yeah. No one's going to do this.
Basically, they just took it and they said, yeah, that's a good drug.
Right. If anyone is listening, you have money, you're not sure if it's real. Send it. I have a P.O. box. Yeah. I like hundos. Yep. I'm real good at testing hundos.
Hell yeah.
See if they're real or not.
That would be a great scam at a grocery store that uses those highlighters to test $20 bills or $100 bills. Just get one that makes it look
just
like
a Sharpie. It's always going to be black.
That's counterfeit. Yeah. That's got to stay here.
This pill's 100% fentanyl. I better take this one. Yeah. Oh, it's pure MDMA. This is great. Hang out with myself. I like this idea, and I think we're focused too much on a physical pill or a physical thing to do this, but I think that it's what gets us as people because we're physical-based beings and we're in a reality that's physical. But I think this can be done all through our mind. And it is a mental thing, but I think that we don't need to have anyone do anything to us or give anything to us. We can do these things ourselves. Totally. Like, how long have we been lied to by tons of organizations saying this is what you need when really all you need to do is just say, oh, I'll just think positive thoughts.
Mindfulness.
Yeah,
mindfulness. 5 minutes of mindfulness
but
a day.
Yeah. Thinking positive is a nopism that allows you to to deal with the chaos, anxiety, and negative things in your life.
That's true.
It's just another. If you just back away and say I'm going to be judgment neutral on these things, right? Then if I think about it that way, I'm like, if all this stuff is just drugs, right? Then the way to measure a drug in my mind is like, what are the consequences of doing this drug?
Yeah,
that's why I think marijuana is such a great drug. It's got very low consequences.
Yeah,
right. You very rarely hear about someone whose life crumbles because it happens.
It felt
just don't eat it.
Yeah. Well, I'll just say the other day. Yeah. Don't. My life is crumbled.
Will
with
change
edibles,
you
for sure.
Yeah.
I thought my life ended when I tried to go through the security line the other day.
Oh, because you had weed on you?
No. Remember? Because I was just a little bit too.
You were too stoned.
And I was like, oh, we got to go to our flight. And then there was nobody at the gate. And I was like, I missed my fucking flight. And I ran up there. Right. Almost went out with them scanning my thing. They were freaking out. I was like, I'm stoned. I felt like my life was ending.
Yeah, but again, I mean, the worst that's going to happen to you is they're going to be like, yeah, we got a super stone guy, 17A.
But that's not
A.
what you think when you're in your
head. No.
Absolutely not. Ooh, I like that. That does tie back into the placebo. It's like your thought process, your cognition is impaired in a different way, in the same way when you're believing something to the extent
that's
that you would believe in a placebo.
Yeah.
So, maybe that's what we need first is a little weed.
Yeah, or mushroom. Mushrooms are similar. I think mushrooms, oftentimes, when people are looking for an effect from mushrooms, they don't feel the effect.
Have you ever
noticed that?
Yeah, they, right.
It's like you'd be like, I'm not feeling anything. Well, you're looking too hard.
You're trying to.
Yeah.
Well, I think that we should measure these things by the consequences that they have. And some of these placebo that we've talked about.
Marjorie Taylor Greene.
No, I think there are like dangerous consequences for that.
Yeah.
Like, does it isolate you from.
She's crack cocaine.
She is a very much like does it build community? Well, yeah, but is that community driven towards.
Hate.
Is it violence, destruction? Mm-hmm. Is it all these things? And like, if that's the case, maybe there's a better pill out there that you could take to give you the same anxiety relief, sense of
without
belonging,
the diarrhea
without
side effects,
without the diet, the terrible side effects.
Yeah,
yeah.
Nausea,
and that's me paraphrasing what these authors of is
conservatism.
Like we're gonna. This is what humans do. We deceive ourselves.
Yeah.
In order to survive in a world that is incredibly complicated.
Yeah.
So it's like the new religions.
Yeah, it's all.
Yeah.
It's new religion. New God.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And what is God but a sugar pill?
It is. It's a sugar
pill. No, God is a DJ.
Yeah.
Okay. Love is a dance floor.
Oh, you're
right.
I'm sorry, I messed up.
Well, what anybody have final thoughts? Shane?
I mean, that was basically my final thought. I think that we can do these things, and we do these things to make our lives better. And keep doing it because life isn't going to get better anytime soon.
If MJT makes you happy, can't be that bad.
That's right. What is MJT?
It makes you
Marjorie
happy.
Taylor Greene.
You thought MJT was a drug.
Yeah, I was like, I've never had
DMT,
that drug.
What?
I'll take it.
No, I think your placebo, if it's positive, go for it. But don't give up hope that there's something that's real as well.
But what is
that was
real?
The least convincing drug pitch ever. Right? I said it's how the snake oil salesman is key to the working.
Yeah,
that's true.
You gotta really let make people believe.
All right, so You ready for the sales pitch?
Yeah, let's hear it. Yeah, let's go.
Do you want the placebo sales pitch or what I believe?
We shouldn't know which one you're giving us.
Yeah, yeah, double blind.
Ooh,
yeah,
double blind. Yeah. Double blind. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, y'all. Cats are everything. Cats, if you feel bad, get a fucking cat.
This is
the truth.
This is not a sugar pill.
Yeah, Jimmy Carter has saved my life. So
your cat's name?
It is.
The incredible politician from the 80s.
Oh, God, I love both. But no, my cat is named Jimmy Carter.
That's
so
great.
I honestly think they're the answer.
Yeah, I agree. Cats have been believed as aliens. Yeah. Egyptians think they're gods. It's great. Yeah. I believe they are.
They will solve hate, honestly.
That's hilarious. If they're like,
you can't be racist when you
have a cat. Super depressed as Pharaoh, and then I got this cat. This has been going great.
Yeah.
They're like, there's like God.
Like, maybe it's not just a cat. Maybe it's a deity.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Do you know about Jimmy Carter being told about UFOs? Do you know about this?
No, I want to know.
The cat or the president?
The president. Yeah, not your cat. Jimmy Carter was told about what's behind the UFO phenomenon, and he basically like had a breakdown. He cried.
Is this recent?
No, this is like back when he was a
president. Because the president gets briefed, like first day in office, they're like, okay,
yeah,
sit down, we're going to tell you everything.
Yeah.
And Jimmy Carter was like.
Yeah, he cried, and he said he regretted bringing his kids in the world.
Oh, my God, I love him even more.
Yeah. And then he went
so
and farmed peanuts.
Is the truth?
And then he went and got a bunch of cats.
He probably did.
For himself, because he's like, the aliens are cats.
That's right. Catatat for humanity.
Catatat.
Well, listen.
Center, baby.
That's right.
This has been one of the most serious yet fun episodes.
Yeah.
usually we're on drugs when we do these kind of episodes.
Alcohol. Enjoyed
it. And I do want, before we get out of here, for our fans, to know where they can find and follow you in your comedy and life journey.
Hi, yes. Hello, my name is Aisatu Kamara, but guess what? I'm going to have a comedy name in the next month because Aisatu is a shit show to try to say. So my Instagram will be the same for like the next 3 months. So please follow me. Not only do I post about my shows, I post lots of Jimmy Carter. So it is I Saw Who. So at ISAWWHO.
I Saw Who.
It's probably why your phone's autocorrecting.
That's probably right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's like, I saw who? I saw two, damn it. 86, I saw two. 86.
Well, this has been really fun. I thank you for coming on Conspiracy Beer Me. Come back anytime.
It's been a pleasure.
Love to have you.
I've had a great time.
And thank you for listening. I'm still Justin Scranton.
I'm Shane Smith, and this was
I Saw Kamara.
Peace.